Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com.
Leaders in triathlete sweat testing and hydration with multi-length and multi-strength electrolytes that match how you sweat. You can get 15% off with the code OXYGENADDICT15, and listeners can also get an exclusive 20% off gift cards via the link in the show notes.
And Team Oxygen Addict at team.oxygenaddict.com.
Event-specific training plans, coaching guidance from Coach Rob Wilby, and supportive teammates in a private Facebook group.
Fueledbycake.com.
That's my charity cake recipe book featuring Vicky Holland, Emma Pooley, Chrissy Wellington, and loads more. And you can get it for £10. No discount on that one, Rob, because it's all for charity.
It's all for charity, mate. And finally, a big thanks to our patrons
who support the show with a monthly donation.
And if you want to get involved in that, you can click on the link on the homepage or follow the link from the show notes. So hello, and welcome to the show on the 27th of, or the week of the 27th of November as we record. Hello, Hells. How are you, my friend?
Rob, I'm very well, thank you. I saw that you did indeed meet your promise because you sent me a photo this week of a little bit of baking.
I'm so proud of myself. I made some chocolate brownies. Me and my little dude, mixing bowl, little chef aprons on, and they were good as well. They
there
were
you
good.
Go. Did you enjoy
not
it?
Be the last shall not. It was really good fun, actually. And I've got to say to any other people out there who are terrified by the thought of baking, it turns out you need a bowl, some stuff to chuck in the bowl, a spoon to mix it up with, and you lob it in the oven and you're done.
That's it. I told you. You just need to be able to read.
Who knew? You just need to know how to read and how to turn the oven on. And you can have your own supply of brownies forever.
That is exactly it. I feel pretty proud that you did that.
Thank you very much. So this is how it begins, Hells. I'm going to get my copy of Fueled by Cake. I'm going to start making one thing every... Me and Xander went down. We bought all the little, what they call ingredients from the supermarket. Got distracted a bit by the Lego Ninjago magazines. Had a bit of a paddy. We couldn't have the Lego Ninjago magazines. Decided we'd rather have the magazine than all the baking stuff. We bought the baking stuff anyway. Big scene. Then we did the baking and it was all okay.
Oh, I loved that. No, honestly, I feel very, very proud that you actually did do it. So you've done brownies, which that's really, really good. And so you've got to make your Nan's date and walnut loaf. I made that over the weekend, by the way.
Did you really? What did you think?
Yep. It's very nice. It's very, very tasty.
Ah, love it. Good yep. old Nan.
And you need to make Heather Fell's raw energy balls as well, don't you?
I do, and I completely forgot to actually buy a copy of the book from you. Well,
I know.
I joined the line, and then I wandered off, and then I came back and you'd gone, and I was like, oh, darn it.
Yeah, I was a bit gutted by that. So, yeah, we had our Tri-Club Christmas do, didn't we, Rob? And we had a 10K on Saturday morning to celebrate the life of a Tri-Club member. And it was hilarious. One of our members turned up in a sumo wrestler suit and ran 10K in one of those blow-up sumo suits. But it was quite impressive because he's quite quick, isn't he?
He was probably the only man who was warm, to be fair to him, old Carl. It was a pretty chilly day, wasn't it?
It was freezing. Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, we weren't the only people racing this weekend. There's been actually, I was quite surprised at how much racing has gone on. I think the days are long gone when there was any kind of end of season break going on. So we've got loads of stuff to bring you. So results are sponsored by
precisionhydration.com.
Absolutely. So stay hydrated and balance your electrolytes this winter when you're either in the turbo or you're out doing hot yoga classes. You can get yourself 20% off the gift cards. Now, here's how it is, fellas, and I am addressing the fellas here. We need to get organized. Christmas is coming. Everybody else in our lives has arranged our Christmas presents already. And let me tell you, you do not want to be getting a gift card for the lady in your life unless she's a triathlete. So you need to be giving hints that this is what you want from your great auntie who will normally buy you socks and a scarf. So get on it over at precisionhydration.com. You already get 50% off any of the products there, but you also get 20% off the gift cards via the link in the show notes.
Awesome. So, Rob, we're going to start in Bahrain.
Could have been an expensive day, couldn't it, that day for the insurers of the 70.3 Bahrain, because it was $1 million on the line if Daniela Ryf or Javier Gomez took the win. But it looks like the end of a long season for Mr. Gomez in particular. It was all over for him at the end of the swim, by the look of things, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the favourite Norwegian, Christian Blumenfelt, who actually came through, Rob, to take the win in this one, just ahead of defending champion Terenzo Bozzoni. So
did you see Terenzo posted a 1:58 on the bike on an accurate 90K?
Nice.
So that's just a shade above 45 kilometres an hour, to put it in perspective, for yeah, 2 hours.
I like that.
I like to feel that Christian Blumenfelt these days is fueled partly on your admiration. I think you're lifting him along those lightning fast run steps with just
he's great, isn't he? And you know, I said a few weeks ago, I said, well, he's putting a few hints out there of like emojis of camels and stuff, and those crazy rides that he had done in Spain. So yeah, he's posted his last 4K splits, Rob.
Now, I saw the picture of this on a screenshot, but couldn't actually see them. What were they? Go on, tell me.
Oh, basically, it went from pretty much 3 minutes, around 3:10, 3:11 sort of thing, to about four minutes.
Oh, he just fell apart, did he, at the end?
Yeah.
Oh, bless him. I was going to say, if it went from 3:10s and got faster. Lord.
No. It sort of, started at... first K would have been 3:12, and then K21 was 4:03. So yeah,
3:12 kilometer at kilometer 18 of a half marathon. Seriously, 3:12.
So he started off at 3:12.
That's like 2:35 pace for 800 meters.
And he went 3:43 was kilometer 18. And then, 21 was 4:03.
Oh, well, he's put it in earlier on, hasn't he? That's amazing. Outrageous. Well, a well-deserved win for him then, wasn't it, for sure?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a great athlete, Rob.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Looks like he put himself in a hole at the finish line as well.
Correct.
So, and then over on the ladies' side... It was Daniela Ryf had her eyes on the $1 million. But again, I think it just came a little bit too late in the season for her, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was Holly Lawrence. There was a really good photo of her taken as she sort of went into the lead, basically. And she had like this massive smile on her face. And she tweeted at the end, "I can't believe I managed to pull off a win here in Bahrain. Great way to end my season. Totally unexpected. Honestly thought I was racing for second place when Danielle dropped me like a stone on the bike. And then to have Annie Howe nearly run me down in the last couple of Ks was stressful." So, yeah, it finished with Holly Lawrence taking the win in 4:02:33, 10 seconds, Rob, ahead of Annie Haug, who crossed in 4:02:43, and then Daniela Ryf in 4:06:13, and Emma Pallant in fourth in 4:07. And we should also mention Sarah Lewis finishing in seventh in 4:19, and a great result too for Rachel Hallam, 10th in 4:32.
And there's an article saying Emma Pallant's got her eyes set on Kona for next year.
Yes, which will be great. Great to watch that one, won't it?
Run.
Exact, Amundo. And then in the men's race, it was taken out by Christian Blumenfeld in 3:40, Terenzo Bozzoni in 3:41, Sven Riederer third in 3:47, just ahead of Javier Gomez in fourth.
We also had a bit of fairly lightning fast racing down in Cozumel as well, where there were wins for Sebi Keenley and Lisa Roberts. And, I mean, last week we had Lionel Sanders, didn't we, go in 7:50 and change. And everyone was saying, wow, that's amazing after second at Kona. This week we've got Sebi Keenley doing essentially, like, going even faster than that with a 7:48 at Cozumel.
Yeah, that's just
the days of... I mean, it almost used to be like, people used to race that, the inverted commas, the validatory Ironman to validate for next year, and almost be like just trying to stay on the wrong side of taking the Mickey, just do enough to get around and not be accused of deliberately going slowly. But to go 7:48 a month after Kona is mind-blowing. 4:11 on the bike in a 2:51 run.
Yeah, that's good going. One thing Rob, I would say is that those swim times are crazily yeah, quick.
Fairly toasty.
41:30. Yeah, that, I mean, so, yeah.
I think we call that current assisted, don't we?
I think so.
Current assisted in four directions.
Yes, I think it may well have been. So, yeah, but still, I mean, great to get that win, isn't it? And clearly still in awesome form.
Yeah,
even good. After COVID. So, yeah, so Sebi Kienle took the win, Michael Vyse second, Ivan Rania third, and then in the women's race, Lisa Roberts getting there across the line first ahead of Kirsty Jahn of Canada and Sonia Tadic of Germany, who just snuck over in 9:53, Rob.
Nine hours and
53 seconds, I should say.
Just outside the magic number.
Yes, exactly. And then Rob, down under, it was 70.3 Western Australia. Western Sydney.
It's confusing, doesn't it?
No, I'm just being stupid. I think I've just had a long Monday.
Where yeah.
My brain is fried. I know it's Western Sydney, and I know that Sydney is not in Western Australia. So Dan Wilson finished his racing career, essentially. Rob, he's now going to retire from triathlon, so he took out the win in 3:42 with a nice 1:12 run to finish off, just ahead of Tim Reed and Braden Curry in third. And then Mel Howshilt returning, still on that comeback, really, isn't it, from an injury stricken season.
Injury after injury, seven. Yeah.
Yeah, ahead of Felicity, Sheedy Ryan, and then Amelia Watkinson in third.
Cool stuff. And I think we've got to give a huge shout out here to this. I've followed this event for years and years. It's got a big place in my heart. The Ultraman World Championships took place in Hawaii over 3 days. We had wins for the UK's Rob Gray and also for Steffi Steinberg. Do you want to know the distances of this, Els?
Yeah, please tell me, because I know overall it's like 320 odd miles, isn't it?
So day one, 10K point-to-point open water swim.
Yep.
Followed by straight out the water, 90-mile bike ride. Day two is, let's get this right, is it 172 miles on the bike, I think. And then day three is a double marathon that goes down the coast of Hawaii from Harvey to finish at the airport. So 52-odd miles. Now, obviously, this event has been gaining popularity and the standard of athletes has been increasing year on year. How fast do you think it's reasonable to expect somebody to run the double marathon on day three of this event?
So I would go for I'd say 7 hours is pretty.
Yeah, that's it. Back in the day, I used to think, right, if someone's gone under 8 hours, 2 4-hour marathons, good effort. And then it became, if somebody goes under 7 hours, 2 3:30s back to back, good effort. Second place. What's his name? Somebody Howard. Jeremy Howard. 6:24 for the double marathon.
Nice.
He started day three, 40 minutes down on the win. And he clawed back 35 minutes and 16 seconds of it to fall. I think he was five minutes short of the victory overall at the end.
Which you don't imagine, do you, after 321 miles of racing?
A 6:24 double marathon.
Yeah, that is. His legs, what are they made of?
I have no idea. And this is the day after a 170-mile bike ride.
And this is the day
after a 90-mile bike ride following a 10-kilometre swim. It's just bonkers. So, Rob Gray is actually British. I got an email from Matt Botterill, who's done some coaching of him this year. And so we're going to try and hook up an interview, hopefully. So he's taken out the win in overall time, 22 hours 19. Jeremy Howard of the USA, 22:25. And Arnaud Selkoff of France in 23:17. On the women's side, we had Steffi Steinberg in 26:02. Amy Kraft in 30 hours 37. So a 4-hour victory. And Fiona Semlink of Texas in 30 hours and 45.
Wow. And Rob, two things jumped out at me there. So Fiona Simulink, who you just mentioned, is 51 years old. The guy who was fourth was 56.
Yeah, it's getting better.
Decca Dave territory, isn't it?
Yeah.
Decca Dave territory.
Yeah. I get Badger and Dave to try and enter this. I think it'd be right up his street.
Wow. You never know next year, Rob.
Well, following on from that, there is going to be an Ultraman UK happening next year. I don't know whether it happened this year. It's been on and off a bit over the years, but based around Lake Bala on the 30th of August to 2nd of September 2018. So, any super ultra endurance lunatics looking for a challenge?
Wow. That'll be, you know what? I'm not trying to sound tempted here at all. It'll be pretty stunning, though.
The run goes from Betsy Coed.
Yeah.
You run to the Snowdon Marathon route and run around the Snowdon Marathon route. You know, it goes up Llanberis Pass, down the far side through Nanperis and around there. And then you run back to Betsy Coed.
Seriously, if you... it would be beautiful.
Yeah.
But all
you're going to see of it is going to be the 1.5 meters of tarmac in front of you for the whole day, right?
Well, I think I'd be looking at a mountain around me if I'm. I would absolutely be taking in the environment. It's hard enough. You may as well try and make it that little bit better for you.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that I took in
the three peaks when I did it, but I mostly saw my own shoelaces for 14 hours.
Well, anyone who fancies it, seriously, do make sure you look around at some point because it's a stunning part of the world.
Yeah, too right.
Says Helen. Rob, I know we're going to do Coach's Couch shortly, but I just wanted to let people know that in a moment we're going to be hearing part two of David McNamee's interview. So hopefully you heard last week's when he was telling us about how Jan Frodeno essentially had been his mentor in the run-up to Kona this year. So we have part two, which involves some of your questions coming up. But first, let's... Should we do Coach's Couch, Rob?
We shall do Coach's Couch, yeah.
Okay, so sponsored by Team Oxygen Addict.
Yes, indeedly doodly. The team is now closed until next year. But if you're interested in maybe getting some coaching next year, you can just put in your email address into the waiting list and we'll contact you when we open again. Probably it's going to be February time at the earliest, we think. But so following on really, Hells, from last week's questions about recovery, I think we've hit upon a bit of a hot topic at the moment. A hot topic at the moment. Because I've had a couple more questions through about recovery and swimming in general. So the first one is, if I've got a recovery swim scheduled, should I do it or should I have the day off instead? And that the question's literally come up four times in the last day and a half. And so I thought, well, it's got to be one that's worth answering. So here's my take on this. We can kind of divide people into two groups of people. We've got average and above swimmers and beginner swimmers who are still learning to swim. And by beginner swimmers, what I mean is everything about swimming feels difficult and challenging and you're always out of breath. If you're in that kind of group, it's really difficult to do any kind of meaningful recovery swim because you're automatically working just a bit too hard to get any kind of meaningful recovery out of doing the swim. Because what we're looking for is for your body to be more recovered at the end of it. It's meant to feel like a yoga session, basically stretching in the water and a free massage by kind of flapping around in the water, rubbing against your muscles and promoting blood flow. So if you're the kind of swimmer who is filled with dread at the thought of the pool and you get in and everything's a battle and you haven't got your breathing and stuff nailed yet, my advice is to not do a recovery swim when scheduled. It's to have a day of rest and recovery in your body in particular will recover better by just having a rest day. For the good and the above average swimmers, if you can choose the pace that you swim at and you can choose to swim slowly, then you're at the point where a recovery swim is going to do you more good than not having a recovery swim. And I'd say unless you're completely wiped out mentally, you will feel better at the end of having a recovery swim than not. And I've talked to a lot of athletes who've gone through kind of sort of our progression, Hells, of not being really swimmers to being people who can swim a bit. And you can understand the arc, can't you? There's a very definite point where you went from, oh my God, everything's a battle to,
yes, definitely.
I can actually kind of float around and I can choose whether
I enjoy this.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're looking forward to a recovery swim, it's a good sign that you can go and do it. And if everything's a battle, don't do it. Okay. And that kind of leads on to the next question, which is how fast, or more importantly, how slow should I do the recovery swims? And so what I thought, I'll give out the rule of thumb that I use, and I'm going to qualify this by saying I've got no scientific basis for this other than just having watched hundreds of swimmers from pool deck over the last decade or whatever. And if we use the Swim Smooth CSS kind of test, which is what I use with my athletes, critical swim speed kind of being an analogy for functional threshold on the bike or threshold running for the run. Your critical swim speed is tested by doing a 400 meters and then a 200 meters a couple of minutes later. You plug those two numbers into an online calculator, and it gives you quite accurately your critical swim speed. So that's the first point. Just doing the 400 isn't enough. You don't do a 400 and then split that, divide it by four and go, that's my CSS pace. That ain't what it is. That's your 400 meter pace. Okay. So when we know what your CSS pace is, for most people, CSS seems to be around 4 or 5 seconds per 100 slower than your 400 meter pace. So if you're a 6 minute swimmer for 400 meters, that's 1:30 for every 100. So your CSS pace will probably come out around 1:34, 1:35 as a rough rule of thumb. Does that make sense so far?
Yep.
And then for every kind of level back down, if we think of, you know, the five training zones and we say that CSS is zone 4, if you just add on 4 seconds per 100 for each zone down you want to go, if in our example we had the 1:34 swimmer at CSS, we had 4 seconds on, a zone 3 swim is going to be 1:38, a zone 2 swim is going to be 1:42, and a zone 1 recovery swim is going to be about 1:46 for this particular athlete.
Yep.
So you're swimming in your recovery swim really bloody slow relative to how fast you can go, right? And most people, when they start out, can't choose the pace they swim. So just try and swim really slowly. For those of you who are listening to this and going, I've never swum that slowly, well, give it a try, because the purpose of that recovery swim isn't to get any kind of fitness benefit. It's to give you a recovery benefit.
I think those paces are really interesting, Rob.
Like I said, I've got no science. It isn't like Jack Daniels, who did, you know, literally thousands of runs with fellas with, you know, he used to, do you know how he used to do it? He used to drive around the running track in a golf buggy next to the runner, and they had like a nose clip on and their mouth breathing out into a plastic bag that he collected all the air in.
And then, really?
And yeah, I think it was called the Douglas bag. These were still being used back in the day when I was at university, when dinosaurs roamed the earth. But then you kind of plugged this bag into a machine and it sucked all the air out and did the analysis and worked out what percentage of VO2 max you'd run at. So it's nowhere near as scientific as that. It's just, it seems to be a rough rule of thumb. So that plus or minus 4 or 5 seconds type thing.
Interesting. Interesting. In conclusion, I'm absolutely rubbish at swimming slowly.
I know. But the good news is everybody is. Hardly anybody ever swims slowly enough, because they find that swimming slowly is really hard.
Yeah.
If you take away that kind of, like the kind of hydrodynamic lift you get by swimming quickly, it's quite hard to balance in the water, but it's really good for you.
But then if you do that, you have to make sure that your hard swims are hard.
There you go. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing with swimming, isn't it? I don't think anybody ever needs encouraging, because we kind of accept that's how swimming feels. Most hard swims end up feeling hard. It's the...
Most swims feel hard.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's like the volume control on the Marshall amplifier. It goes all the way to 11. Well, in swimming, it doesn't. There's just one knob. It just goes to one. You just get in and swim hard. So you've got to learn to go slowly to realize that you are actually choosing to swim harder.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good.
Cool stuff. Now then, this leads us beautifully into our interview with David McNamee.
It does, Rob. Doesn't it?
Haven't we done well? Yeah. It's like we planned it.
So, we never plan things. That's a joke. So, Mr. David McNamee, brilliant part one last week, and so in part two we asked for your questions, so David answers quite a few of your questions. Some of them he covered in part one of the interview without specifically saying, okay, this question comes in from, you know, John in Norfolk. But at the towards the end of it, it's also really, really interesting about that balance in life. So have a listen to part two of our interview with David McNamee.
I liked your tweet the other day, which was about the seasons and the sort of coffee stops, and at the moment they tend to be more pub stops.
Oh, very much so. Well, yeah, here it's like it's cafe culture with like bar here in Girona. So like, yeah, they have very much these, you can have a coffee or you can have a beer. Right now I'm tending towards beer. Beer is much more enjoyable right now. You put in some, there's like a wonderful thing called patatas bravas they have in Spain, and I could live my life off them. So right now it's very much sort of enjoying it sort of. I've not cycled with a bike computer since Hawaii. I've not ran with a watch since Hawaii. I've sort of went out and just enjoyed myself. And when I get bored, I sort of come home. That's sort of the structure of my training right now.
And is that going to be the case for the next couple of weeks, or after Christmas, then will you get back on it, or before Christmas?
So we have, I think, 4th of December is when we'll sort of start following the plan again. But again, it won't be anything crazy too early. I probably won't race now till April. And I think also in the past years, I've always got back too quickly. So this year it's going to be December the 4th, go back to like a structured plan and then sort of gradually build up through like the winter and sort of aim for my first event sort of April time. So I've still got another 2 and a bit weeks of just sort of, I call it, I'm a professional exerciser right now. Like, and it's really a good life, you know. I couldn't do it 12 months of the year. I'm sure I'd get bored and sort of, yeah. But right now it's sort of nice just to go out and relax and just, I love cycling, I love running, I love swimming, but it's nice. Sometimes you can sort of, when you're always like targeting pace and power and times in the pool, you can lose sight of the fact that you actually just love it. For me to sort of go out on a bike and just sort of just enjoy being in people's companies and stuff, enjoying being outside in the sort of countryside, it's nice to reconnect with why you're doing this sport.
Definitely. I think that is so important, and to have that mental break as well, isn't it? It's just it keeps you going and gives you more to want to go again next season.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And I think sort of, yeah, especially after the World Championships, especially Kona is such a big thing, especially mentally. It's very good just to relax and chill out and just not worry about it, because there is, especially in Ironman, there's just such a big mental toll that racing takes on you that you don't really appreciate it. But yeah, it's nice just to have this break and just sort of mentally recharge as well as physically.
Going back to, I want to ask one more question about that race, right? What was it like being in that race with, you know, Lionel Sanders, who just, we were following it, and he's just like an amazing beast. And then obviously you were running with Patrick Langer, weren't you? And then he went on to win it. So what was it like being with those guys and like right at the pointy end of it?
Well, when Lionel came behind the bike with Cameron Wolf and Sebastian, I didn't like that point at all, to be honest. I thought, this is crazy. Just the sheer power that those guys came by at, it's like, whew, I might see these guys sort of at the finish line. But yeah, like, crazy enough, like, I think with 80Ks to go, the one person that I found myself with was Patrick. And we could see, like, the sort of, the second group on the road, so behind sort of Lionel and Sebastian and stuff. By this point, it had all broken apart, the race, but we could see, me and Patrick could see the group that we needed to get to. And it was very much, okay, we need to get there. We're going to have to work together to get there. So there was me and Patrick with 80 kicks to go in the bag, just like turn ourselves inside and out for one another, just to try and get ourselves back with a group, just so we can mend. It's not just like, everybody thinks it's a lot easier in a group, but I think the beauty of being in a group in Hawaii is just mentally as well, is that you can switch off. Instead of like focusing purely on power and stuff, you just need to focus on holding that gap to the guy in front. So yeah, for me, it was, that point was very good to have Patrick around, because I think if Patrick wasn't around that point, sort of, I would not be in the podium. I think Patrick probably would say the similar thing about me, was that it's crazy that the alliance that we made in the road, sort of, yeah, with 80Ks to go on the bike, was sort of what got us both in the podium. It was obviously, we both ran fantastically, but we got ourselves on the podium because with 80Ks to go on the bike, we both knew exactly what we had to do for one another to get ourselves back in the game.
And you actually say that to each other when you're out on the road, and when in the middle of the race, you're sort of saying, we need to get up there.
Yeah, I screamed some things at Patrick and he understood the message. Even with my Scottish accent, he understood the message, and he very much was like, yep, you're right. We're going to have to go for it. We just need to get ourselves back to this group, no matter what. And then running, sort of, I ran the first 15Ks with Patrick, and then Patrick has this incredible ability that he just does not seem to tire on the run. He just gets into pace and he just holds that pace to the finish line, and everyone else sort of suffers, and I don't think he's really ever got that message. I ran 15Ks with him. He sort of disappeared up the road, and yeah, I just got into my rhythm, and yeah, I just sort of worked my way through the field, and I knew I'd run well because I knew run training would be going very well in Girona, but I obviously don't know whether it would be enough to get me on the podium. I had to rely on other people sort of having an off day in the run. I got there, and yeah, with 3Ks to go, I passed Sebastian. And
what was that bit like?
It's a mixture of excitement and just fear, because all of a sudden you find yourself on that podium, and logically you should be thinking, well, I've been catching him by like a good 20 seconds a kilometre. He's not going to be able to stay with me or get back up to me. But there's a part of your brain that's so frightened that all of a sudden he's going to find something and he's going to chase you back down and beat you. And like, I'm going by, I'm sort of like trying to look behind to see where he is, but then in my head I'm like, don't look behind, that's stupid. Like, that's the first thing you learn about running, is never look behind. It just gives the person, so you're like, you're half looking, half not looking, you're sort of like trying to scream at someone like, where's Sebastian? And they just look at you like, dude, we can't even see him. And it's like, I'm like, no, but he has to be there. So it's not until you actually get onto the carpet then that you sort of, you finally like, ah, I can relax here. It's done. I'm actually going to do this. It's sort of, you go through a lot of emotions in Hawaii.
And I guess next year you would love to improve on your third place.
Yeah, I think, yeah, obviously the goal will be to try and win it. It's going to be hard, it's world championships. It's going to be, again, I need to go there as prepared as I was this year and hope that I've moved some things along. And yeah, I very much have to approach next year as I'm here and I'm going to try and win this.
What do you reckon Gomez and potentially Ali Brownlee would do to a world championship race?
It's difficult. I think, like with Ironman, like the distance, they'll be very good. But Kona is just special because of the heat and the humidity, and it affects people in very different ways. Like, I personally, I find it fine. Like, it's not pleasant, but I always perform well in it. But then you get some great superstars in a sport that sort of, they dominate at Ironman through the season. Like, I think of, like, Marina van Hoenenacker, who sort of, at a time, had the world record for Ironman, and he'd go to Hawaii every year and just couldn't handle it, just the humidity and the heat. So that's the thing, like, Kona, it's so unpredictable. Like, obviously, what have you is that 70.3 this year is incredible, but there's a much bigger difference between Olympic and 70.3 than there is between 70.3 and Ironman. So it's hard to predict, and it's even more difficult when you're talking about Kona. For sure, especially Javier, just from what he's did in 70.3, is that he will have some phenomenal Ironman races. But whether one of them will be in Kona, I don't know.
Would you love to race against them again, but over that longer distance?
Oh, yeah. I think sort of. I love competing against the best in the world. And, yeah, come Kona, you want, yeah, all the best athletes in the world to be there. And, yeah, it'd be great to sort of race them again. It's nice to see sort of old faces. And, you know, we already have one Olympic male champion racing. So to have another Olympic male champion racing, to have the Olympic silver medalist racing, I think it can only be good for the sport.
David, we were sent quite a few questions from listeners, so we're going to crack through some of them. And we will definitely come on to porridge and jam, because we haven't done that yet. And that's a vital part
of course.
This chat.
That's when we get very personal with things.
Yeah, exactly. But let's kick off. We can do sort of maybe like slightly kind of quick answer questions, but equally, you know, feel free to go a little bit more into it. Anyway, Shane Wilson says, what do you do to mentally prepare yourself before a big race like Kona?
So Kona's like, you know, it's a world championship, so it's obviously, but especially being a pro, it's even more different, because all of a sudden it's like the one race of the year where all the sponsors are there and everybody who's anybody from these companies are there to watch the athletes. But then there's also like team managers and managers around, so there's a lot more different people around an event than usual. So that sort of can create mental stress. But I think the best thing that I do is that I bring a friend with me to Hawaii every year. So I have a good friend, Alex, who comes with me. And the beauty of Alex is that in his day job, he's the sports director for Dimension Data Cycling. So yeah, when you're used to sort of working and directing at sort of Tour de France and Giro and Vuelta, then for him, Hawaii is sort of a walk in the park, hopefully. So yeah, I think for me, it's just really good to have someone there to look after you who understands who you are as a person and what you need. So for Hawaii, that's how I mentally prepared, like, differently to other events. And then just in general, like, I always have, like, I write a plan down of swimming. This is what I need to do in the water to have a good swim, whether it's sort of get a really good start, like just do 50 fast strokes to begin with and just see where I am after that, or, you know, just simple things of like, well, I'm on the bike, this is exactly when I should be eating, what I should be eating, and just simple things. But I always have that written down, and I sort of go through them like 2 or 3 days before the race, and again the day before the race, just so I know exactly what to focus on in order to get the best out of myself. And I think just for me, having a plan sort of really relaxes me. If I have a plan of what I need to do, then I can deal with anything as long as I have some sort of plan. So for me, that's what I do. And yeah, especially in Kona, having Alex there is such a massive help.
Sticking with the mental sort of side of things, Carl McPherson says, how do you manage to run down others and knock crack yourself? As in, like, mental training tools during an Ironman marathon?
So in a marathon, so mentally, I never really think about it as being a marathon. So I always wear a watch, and on that watch I always have just, like, current lap and, like, lap pace average. And I no matter where I am in sort of the how I'm progressing, I always lap it every 15 minutes. And so for me, in my head, I'm just going out for like 10, 15 minute runs plus a little bit on the end. And every 15 minutes, sort of, no matter how bad the last 15 minutes has went, I'm always like, well, this is a new 15 minutes. Let's make this the best I can. So that's what I focus on. It's just little bricks rather than being like, this is a marathon. We've got 42 kilometers to run here. It's very much, I've got 15 minutes to go. It's fine.
It's and then undoable. After that,
I've got another 15 minutes. Like, Emily can run 15 minutes. And then, like, even when I'm going through, like, a really bad spell, and I think the worst thing we can do to ourselves is that all of a sudden we sort of, like, we think everyone else looks very good and they must be going really well. Whereas I sort of have to remind myself, no, like, I'm not the only one that's feeling awful right now. We're all feeling awful. This should feel hard. Like, this is Ironman, and all I can do is my best. All I can do is my best in this situation. And that's how I keep calm and keep moving forward, is that just these little tricks. You can trick your mind quite easily.
Susie Richards asks about Kona. Did you believe that you could podium? I think we've covered that one. But she also says, what do you think is key for a successful training setup? Because obviously you've been based in different places. Girona, you've been in Leeds. You mentioned Portugal earlier with Joel Filial. So what's key to success?
I think a part of it is maybe depending on like what stage of development you are. Yep. So for me, being like a mature athlete now, for me, I need to be in an environment where I'm just like fundamentally happy to be, like, a place where I would happily live there, even if I wasn't training. So I think once you find an environment that you're happy with, then the rest sort of looks after itself. But obviously for me, sort of something that makes me happy is like the ability to have awesome country roads to go out and cycle on, have very good access to running trails, have some nice swimming pools, to have like friends to train with. But I think the fundamental key, especially for me at this point in my career, is that to be in a place where I'm just happy living. And then once you've got that taken care of, which, you know, it's a lot more difficult than it sounds, you can sort of work to improve everything else. So I turned up in Girona without, I didn't know anybody really, but I knew like I'd been visited the city before. I loved the city. I knew I wanted to be here. So yeah, I turned up. I sort of found an access to the swimming pool. I met some friends to cycle with, and that started the ball progressing with the training front. And then obviously sort of training with Jan and stuff is just sort of, yeah, it's monumentally sort of improve things. I think it's a difficult question to answer. It's very much what stage of your career you're at, but for me it's just to be in a place that I enjoy being.
Kit Walker asks about things that you did differently for being successful in Kona this year, but I think we've covered a lot of that, and that was a lot of Jan, basically. We're loving Jan. Someone else asked a similar question. Andrew Woodruff has said, what's it like training with Jan? So we've done that one as well. Very quick fire ones. Alistair Horribin, have you ever made a bike bottle with Iron Brew?
No. Oh, good Lord, no. It's strange. Like, I used to love this stuff when I grew up. But now, like, every time I go back, I always try it. And, like, I'm unsure now. Like, yeah.
Don't say that too loudly. They might not.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I might get my Scottishness rescinded.
Exactly. Right, let's move on to porridge then, because that will win you a few points back. Right, Nick asks, in your expert opinion, what is the best way of making porridge?
Okay, how long do we have, like, time-wise?
How long do you need?
How much detail do we need? Do we need to talk about oat size first? For there's different types of oats.
Go on, you are clearly an expert.
I personally prefer rolled oats. So those are the slightly thicker ones. But again, this depends on geographical location, because it's very easy to get them in Scotland. But when you move outside of Scotland, finding rolled oats becomes difficult. So that's when you generally get the instant oats, which, you know, I have my own personal views on them, and maybe I should keep them secret. Let's just say I prefer the rolled oats. So it has to start with rolled oats. It obviously has to be on like a stovetop. I hate the microwave. I will never understand the microwave in porridge. It just doesn't go. I've used the microwave once this year, and that was 3 days after Hawaii, and that was desperate. That was like, we were in a national park in a volcano, and the little lodge that we stayed in didn't have like a stove or anything, but I had a microwave, so that was the only feasible way to make it.
But you felt dirty.
Yeah, I felt like I cheated. I don't know why. I just, you know, I had to have a shower afterwards. So we've got the rolled oats, we've got a stovetop, and then we need milk. I know traditionally it's Scottish, it's water, but it's not. Like, let's be honest, it's much better with milk. So we have the milk, we have the rolled oats, and then the next ingredient is cinnamon. Ooh. Cinnamon makes life better. If you've not tried it, try it. Cinnamon just makes life better. And then we add the fruit. Like, for me personally, there's always a banana there. It's a staple. And then I have like a very nice fruit shop near me, and I just go down once or twice a week and just see what looks the best. So it could be pears, it could be strawberries, it could be peaches, you know. You can freestyle a little bit. As long as it's a banana, you can freestyle.
I love this.
Yeah. And now the one recent sort of ingredient I've added is that I have a Canadian roommate in Spain, and obviously with Canada comes maple syrup. So recently I've been adding like a little dollop of maple syrup, and it's a game changer.
It's so good.
It's just a game changer, you know. And I'll be honest, sometimes it's not even a dollop, it's like a river. I don't even want to know how many calories I'm putting into it, but it is. And then afterwards you've had so much salt, you've added so much sugar, you probably should brush your teeth. But it is awesome. And then the other thing is, like, when you're heating it up in the stove, is just take your time. Especially with rolled oats, you're probably talking about 12 to 15 minutes of stove time.
Oh my God, I don't have that much time in the morning, David.
Well, this is, you're in England, so you'll get instant, so it'll be like 45 minutes. It's fine.
Wow.
But, you know, this is why I'm always late to like the first sessions of the day.
Because you're doing your porridge.
Time. Yeah, it's okay. People understand. It's fine.
Moving on from maple syrup and porridge to jam. Stu Fraser, what is your favourite kind of jam and why? Jamfredino isn't an acceptable answer. Because you do say you're a jam snob.
I do. So, again, we're all talking about geographical location. So the preference in Scotland is that I like Mackie's jam. But, again, when you leave Scotland, it's a difficult thing to find. So here, it's Bon Maman jam.
Yeah, can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, and it has to be like strawberry or raspberry. I don't understand. You know, like, you get like apricot and blackcurrant jams. I just don't understand them. Like, it has to be strawberry or raspberry for me. Like, yeah, I don't care how good, high quality the apricot jam is. It's just, it's apricots. It's just, no.
We're moving on to chocolate cake. Your former training partner, one of them, the lovely Groffy, who we had on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, says, how does chocolate cake play a role? Because the first part of her question is actually, how is a balanced lifestyle important to your success? But the second part is, and how does chocolate cake play a role?
Oh, I think chocolate cake makes everything better in life. Especially like if you get like a good sort of like high quality ice cream to go with it. Yeah.
Are there any chocolate cake stories? Is there a reason that Groffy was asking about chocolate cake?
No, I think probably, I remember she once sort of, when she was thinking about moving to 70.3 racing this year, she messaged me to ask me, like, what is the difference? She's like, and I was like, to be honest, you just need to go and eat some chocolate cake. And that was my coaching advice to her. A successful transition to 70.3 is based on chocolate cake. And I think she was fourth at World Championships this year.
Correct.
That was some good coaching advice. I don't even charge for that sort of golden nuggets.
Was it go and eat chocolate cake to just not worry too much about it, or just go and eat chocolate cake to add the extra calories that you're going to be burning off for?
I don't know. I think she was asking for some magical advice and stuff, and that's the only thing that came to my head was, you know, maybe I was eating chocolate cake myself and I thought, well, you'll be happy eating chocolate cake. It's good fuel for you. And, you know, it seemed to work. She was fourth. Yeah. But no, I think sort of, obviously, for me, I think we touched a little bit on it when I mentioned about training environment, is that for me, it's very much like having a balanced lifestyle. And sort of deciding like what I talked about, happiness and sort of being in an environment that you like. And I think in the past, sort of, I had this perception of what an athlete should be like and how they should train and what they should be doing away from training, or I suppose saying what they shouldn't be doing. And that sort of, I forced myself into that sort of lifestyle, and that made me miserable. I probably had 2 or 3 years where I was probably living what you'd see as like the perfect athlete lifestyle, and well, what the perceived athlete lifestyle. And yeah, it wasn't any fun. My race results were barely progressing, and yeah, I took a step back and I was like, well, what makes me happy? And sort of, it was very much learning that balance in life, is that I love training. I love training hard. I love trying to get the best out of my body, but I'm also the guy that likes to go and meet some friends and have a couple of beers like 3-4 times a week and, you know, just talk about what's happening in their lives and stuff, because, like, especially in triathlon, is that it can almost become like all consuming. And I think for a few years it was all consuming for me, and I really struggled with that. And yeah, ever since I sort of took a step back and sort of relaxed a little bit and found some balance in my life, I sort of, for me, that's when the race results really sort of improved, was once I found that balance in life, once I found that it's actually okay to go out and have a few beers, you know, with friends and stuff. And yeah, it's, for me, it's not for every athlete out there, but I've accepted who I am as a person, what makes me happy and stuff, and what ultimately gets the best out of me. And that is very much having these different escapes and doing different things and stuff. And yeah, for me, that's been crucial to my success as an athlete, but also to my happiness as a person.
I love it. David, it's been I've really, really enjoyed chatting to you. I've kept you far longer than I said I would, for which I am very sorry. But as you're in Spain, you're probably still waiting for about 3 hours to eat dinner. So
I was going to say, I've still got another half an hour till I have to go out and meet some friends for dinner. You know, people are still working at this time.
That's it, isn't it? That's such a good lifestyle.
But I love it. This is what I love, is that I love that, yeah, you know, I'll go out, I'll meet some friends and stuff, and then have a few beers. I'll probably get home sort of just before midnight. And yeah, we never train before 8:30 in the morning, so I still get 7-8 hours sleep a night. So obviously we're in Spain, so we get the siesta, which is anywhere between like 45 minutes to 2 hours. It's perfect, you know. It's a very, for me, it fits. It's a perfect fit that what I have here, and that sort of, yeah, that's why I love being here and I love doing the sport.
That is brilliant. It's great to hear, you know, someone who clearly, as you were saying, a few years ago came through a difficult patch. You've come out the other side, you know, it's all paying off, you're getting the results, and as you say, you're happy, which is brilliant.
Perfect. And if you want me to like write up some like recipes for porridge and stuff, I'm always more than willing to do that. Like, it makes me happy just writing and talking about porridge.
Great deal, you're on.
Perfect, speak to you later.
What a good guy he is, isn't he?
Really, really good guy. Really,
so
really
great
good
to see him get that success. I really enjoyed. Hats off to you, mate, for a great interview as well. It was one of the favourite ones I think you've done. That.
Oh, I really, really enjoyed talking to David. He was, yeah, just very interesting. And it was great to hear his perspective on things in Spain and just that openness of Gianfranco.
He's really down to earth, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the fact that, you know, he took that, I guess you could say, a risk, or he was brave to take that step and go out to Spain and start again out there in a way, and it's absolutely paid off, and it suits him down to the ground. I particularly liked the was a bit confused by the chocolate cake question from Sarah Groffy, who we had on. I was very confused by that, and I was like, but hold on, but I don't understand, is there a story behind this chocolate cake?
Yeah.
It's like, no, just my advice. So there we go. just eat cake, basically. And then Rob, I mean, yeah, clearly all the triathlon stuff's very, you know, that's fascinating stuff. That's why we listen to this podcast. It's why we do it. But come on, a bit of porridge knowledge.
There's a man who's passionate about his porridge, no question. I don't think there's ever been anybody more passionate about it, ever.
Porridge knowledge. Yeah, yeah. He did tweet something this week about finding another ingredient. So he mentioned maple syrup there in the interview, but he's found a bit of Bailey's.
Oh really?
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah.
That'll help the swim miles pass by more quickly.
That's it. Pimple porridge with a bit of Bailey's.
Wouldn't do a lot for my swim form first thing in the morning.
Oh God, don't go there. I think I'd absolutely vomit if I put that in my porridge.
You're right.
Yeah. Rob, I was gonna say, talking about, you know, chocolate cake and cake, a little update and a thank you from everyone, or for everyone, who has purchased a copy so far.
Yeah, how's it going?
Fueled by More Cake. Okay, so some stats for you. This is a week since we went live on the website.
Yeah.
My wonderful parents, I think, honestly, Rob, my mum's been having conversations with podcast listeners over email. She's loving it. So they are doing an amazing job of posting out the books, because I genuinely, it would be, I think,
I
cannot squeeze that in. So they're being amazing, and they are posting out the books. So within 7 days, they had sent out 95 packages.
Wow, brilliant.
Yeah, how good's that? So that might not be, like, that's not necessarily one book in each package. That could be, I mean, one super awesome person ordered 20. So they have sent out 95 packages.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So,
oh, congratulations, so right, mate. A lot of hard work has gone into that. I'm glad to see it being really successful.
Thanks. We await the Rob Wilby order.
I'm going online, ridiculous though it sounds, to have seen you in the flesh. Not as you might have a conversation with you across the crowded bar, but seeing you in the flesh, books in hand, not more than 24 hours ago. I'm now going to order one over the internet.
Great. I love this. So yeah, you can go and get your copy at www.fueledbycake.com. There's an online shop, and no, there is not a discount for Oxygen Addict Triathlon podcast listeners, because it's for charity.
People have been asking.
A few people have asked.
You are joking. If you've asked for a discount on this book, give another donation. Charity tax.
Yeah, it is all for charity. So we're hoping to raise £15,000 for Melanoma UK, Young Epilepsy and East Cheshire Hospice. So thank you so much, everybody who's ordered a copy.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant, brilliant. All right, let's wrap it up, Hells. That's the end of another show.
Oh, yeah. I think it is. Oh, Rob, does everyone want an update on Helen's injury?
Yes, please.
Well, a slight bit of a stress fracture going on in the femur.
Oh man,
that's what the results of the scan said. So there you go. Still no running.
Helen Murray completed Ironman Wales in fourth place in age group with a broken leg.
Oh, it's not good. It's not good, is it?
No, man.
Not
you
good.
You are a hard, hard person.
Well, it explains why I was in so much pain. I mean, that's one thing now. And it was, I don't know, it started hurting about 3-4 weeks before Ironman Wales. But at that point, for me personally, it was really difficult to know whether, is it in your head or is it actually your body or quite what? I mean, I think
deep down, I probably thought there's something not quite right. But still, you do question your mind at that point, don't you? And then there was clearly something very wrong, like a day or two after, when I couldn't walk. So I was limping, and then I continued to limp for a couple of weeks. So yeah, something not right. So yeah,
so
there
we
go.
So what's the prognosis with that then? How long before you're like back in action, back in shape kind of thing?
Well, it's one of those things now.
Is it one of those like just wait and see things?
So I'm seeing the physio again this week. And originally when I saw him, he said you'd be looking at 3 months of not running. So pretty much done 2 months of not running, so it's not that much longer. And then I think rehab, and then I'd be good to have a little bit more. I don't know. There could be more going on, couldn't there? So
yeah. Best be on the safe side, isn't it, with these
things?
That's
exactly it. And I would, as I've said to a few people, I would prefer to be able to run in 2 years' time, you know, and be able to run well again, rather than thinking, oh, I need to run next week, because actually I don't. Bigger picture, I want to be able to run when I'm like 40,
yeah,
50, 60. So yes, we need to get the body better.
Yeah, you said it, mate. Yeah. Well, fingers crossed for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. There we go. We can wrap it up now that everyone's had an update of clearly.
I'm sure everybody out there who's got an injury is feeling your pain right now. No question. The brotherhood and sisterhood of injured runners and triathletes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There's many, many, many like that.
All right, well, here we go. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. You've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. I'm Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And until next week, have a great, safe training racing week. Look after yourselves. Get some cake made. Buy a book if you've not already. And thanks very much to our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Don't forget to get yourself one of their gift cards for Christmas with 20% off following the link in the show notes. All right, cheers, everyone. See ya.